أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبو القاسم محمد وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. السلام عليكم brothers and sisters. It's an honor to be here to participate in such a conference about Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Revolution, the founder of all of the present Islamic movements in the world right now. It's also an honor to speak here at the Islamic Center, one of the largest Shia masjids in the UK, a masjid that's under the control of Sayyid Khamenei. And it's an honor to be here with all the brothers and sisters who I've seen some of you in the past and meeting many of you today for the first time. Inshallah, I want to start the speech. If you could recite three loud salawats for the soul of Imam Khomeini. Inshallah, one more, even louder, for the protection of Sayyid Ali Khamenei. I was asked a few weeks ago if I was able to come here to provide a speech or to give a lecture about the personality of Imam Khomeini. And I accepted. And then I started thinking about what I wanted to talk about. I started thinking that there's so many different things about Imam Khomeini that one could speak about. One could speak, as the brother did, about the Irfani aspect of Imam Khomeini. One could speak about how great of a faqir, of a jurisprudent he was. One could speak about him on a political level, how he was, you know, very brave, a very good politician. One could speak about him in so many different areas. So it was hard for me to choose. And then thinking about that, I decided that maybe that is what I should speak about. How well-rounded he was. He was multidimensional. He wasn't only one-dimensional. And this is very important, because you could see that when I started thinking about that, I thought about some of the people of the past or even in the present who make mistakes. Some people who are arifs, are mystics, but they don't give importance to fiqh. And you see that they make mistakes. Some faqis, some jurisprudents, who are very strong in fiqh, but they don't give importance to Islamic spirituality. And you see problems arise. And not only in those two issues, but many other issues. So I thought that maybe talking about how well-rounded he was would be appropriate. And I think that his well-roundedness was actually one of the main reasons of his success, because he was able to look at every issue that arose in many different dimensions, not just in one dimension, but he had an open mind, an open heart, and he was able to look at it in many different dimensions. And this is why his revolution was successful. This is why not only his revolution in Iran, but throughout the world, we see revolutions following in his footsteps. We see movements following in his footsteps. Even here in England, even all of us today are here because of what he did, because of who he was, because of what he stood for. When I was in Qom, which I'm still in Qom, there was one of my teachers, he told me a story. I don't know if it was him or someone he knew. But he said that he went to the mountains of Tibet, and he met with some small village of people who had, you know, who had no idea of what modern life was, no idea of anything. And they started talking, and somehow he wanted to tell them, you know, about fishes, a fish. And those people had no idea what a fish was. He said, you know, a fish, they live in water, they swim. And the people in this village started making fun of him, saying, how could something live in the water? They can't breathe. There's no such thing. You're lying to us. And this man, this scholar was sitting there like, wow, look at these people. Don't even know what fish are. And he looked up and he saw that there was a little picture of Imam Khomeini on their wall. He said, these people in the middle of a mountain who don't know what fish are, they know who Imam Khomeini is. And you could see that through this, through what he stood for, all of the speeches before this speech were very moving speeches. And everyone talked about different aspects of Imam Khomeini's life. And you see that if you put all of them together, this is why he was so successful. If you put everything that was together said today, and even more, you'll see that this is why his movement was able to become so successful, was able to overcome such a vast land. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. I wanted the topic that was given to me, it's written on the flyer, community leadership. But they told me one thing and they gave a title of another thing. The topic was to speak about the personality of Imam Khomeini, and then to speak a little bit about Wilayat al-Faqih, and at the end to allude to Sayyid Khamenei. So I'm going to do that. Inshallah, if you were hoping for a speech about community leadership, inshallah, you won't be upset. But I wanted to present this. I thought this was more interesting and more relevant to the conference at hand. So as I said, well-roundedness. I wanted to touch on a few different aspects of Imam Khomeini's life to show that he was very strong in many different fields. And then I'll move on to the other subjects I mentioned. The first one that I wanted to mention was Irfan, which the brother, mashallah, spoke very well about. And showed how strong Imam Khomeini was, how sincere he was, how pious he was, how this Irfani or mystic outlook of life shaped his personality and shaped the decisions that he made. I just wanted to add to that a little bit, if I could, saying that Imam Khomeini, both on a theoretical and a practical level, was at the top of this field in the contemporary era and throughout history. Not only in this era was he one of the top Arifs, but throughout history. And we see through, the brother was mentioning many of the practical aspects. The theoretical aspects are found in his books. The brother mentioned the book 40 Hadith, Adab al-Salat. All of these books are excellent examples. If you read these books, you could see how strong he was in Irfan. I don't want to spend too much time on that because that was what the previous speech was. The next aspect I wanted to mention was tafsir. This is an aspect that's very rarely talked about, because Imam Khomeini didn't have an independent work on tafsir, apart from a few lectures that he gave on the tafsir of Surah Hamd, which was written in a book and then translated, partially translated in a book called Light Within Me. If any of you have seen that book, that's a partial translation of these lectures. Now, Imam Khomeini was a very strong commentator of the Quran, a very strong mufassir. And in those few lectures, one could see this. Also in the book Adab al-Salat, which was mentioned, he provides brief tafsirs of Surah Hamd, Surah Qadr, and a few other surahs. And he explains throughout many of his speeches, he explains verses of the Quran. Throughout some of his other books, he explains verses of the Quran. And it's something that we should look into. I'm actually, right now, I'm in the process of translating a book which is a compilation of articles about Imam Khomeini's Quranic views. And this book, again, to show the well-roundedness of him, this book was compiled in such a conference that was only about this aspect of Imam Khomeini. So they had a huge conference in Iran only about the aspect of Imam Khomeini's Quranic views. And this was the first conference of over 10 conferences that are planned, each one to be just on one aspect of his life. So to give one speech, to try to say everything in one speech, is impossible. There are books and books and books could be written about the different aspects of Imam Khomeini. But in this book that I'm translated, I've already translated about half of it, which is probably about 7 or 8 articles. It's very, very interesting information in it. Some of them talk about his viewpoints on opinionated tafsir, tafsir birai. Some of them talk about his viewpoints on tahrif al-Qur'an, that there was no alteration in the Qur'an. And the strength that he speaks about this, taking from his books and speeches, is unbelievable. I would implore everyone, inshallah, when this book is printed, to read it. You'll open up a new way to look at Imam Khomeini, inshallah, as it has for me. But one aspect of his tafsir is that there's many different methods that one could write tafsir in. One could write a traditional tafsir, which is using hadith. One could write ijtihadi tafsir, or an intellectual tafsir. Imam Khomeini, the tafsir, the way that he would explain verses was more in an Irfani style. He would use a mystic method to do tafsir of the Qur'an. But just showing how well-rounded he is, he used that style to speak about social issues. So he used the Irfani mystic style to speak about the social issues that are prevalent in the world today. Hajjaj Moizi was mentioning in his speech about the promises that Allah gives to the believers, that Allah gives to mankind, which he was mentioning, different promises. These are called divine sunnahs that Imam Khomeini talked extensively about. So just that's one aspect. Another aspect is fiqh, or jurisprudence. We all know that Imam Khomeini was a faqih, was a very strong jurisprudent of his time, arguably was the most knowledgeable of his time. And we see that it's even more than that. I mean, because salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. There's many ways to prove how strong he was. One could look in fiqh, in jurisprudence. One could look at the books that he wrote. Aside from Tahrir Wasila, which was mentioned today, he wrote a 5-volume book on business transactions, on buying and selling. He wrote a 5-volume book on Taharat. I studied the book on business transactions for 2 years in Qom, Kitab al-Bay. From my limited experience, we have much stronger scholars here than me, but from my limited experience, that was probably the most in-depth book that I've ever seen. It was very, very difficult to understand, not because of the way he wrote it, but because of the subject matter that it discusses. And he goes deep into the issues, mentioning various viewpoints from other scholars, criticizing them, mentioning his own points. It's just something that if you're in that field, it's amazing to see. And another way to prove how strong he was the students he had, the people that he raised. You see that a number of the Muraja today, for instance, Ayatollah Makarim Shirazi, Ayatollah Jafar Sobhani, Ayatollah Fazlullah Karani, who recently passed away, all of these were students of Imam Khomeini. They were raised by Imam Khomeini. So one way of showing how strong he was is looking at his students to see that he was able to reach such a level where he could train such people that they have also reached such levels. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Another part of his of fiqh that was really important was that he paid attention to contemporary issues. He didn't remain only on taharat and fasting and prayer. He also paid attention to issues of the day. For instance, Walayat al-Faqih. For instance, an Islamic government. And he gave these issues grave importance, which shaped the modern world of Shia Islam. And that kind of brings me into the final aspect, or the final dimension of Imam Khomeini that I'm going to speak about today, which is his politics. Now, Imam Khomeini was a political person. He cared about the society. Now, what I mean by politics are not the dirty politics that we mean by in the West. What I mean by politics is governing the society, giving importance to the society, not only the individual. And this was something that was very important for him. And he had two characteristics that really helped him in this field. One of them was his bravery, and the other one was his wisdom. He was both very brave and very wise, and these two qualities helped him help shape his political ideology. Now, I remember when I was in Iran, the Al-Asr SVC, which some of you have been on, this group, they came to Iran and I participated with their short program course, and they took me to Khomeini. They took all of the people from the UK that were there and me and a couple other people to the city of Khomeini, which is where Imam was born. We went to his house, we went into the room where he was born, they gave us a whole tour. It was a great experience, but one part of it stood out for me. One part of it stood out from all of the other parts, where they took us to some, in back of his house there was kind of like a tower, where you'd have to walk upstairs, a winding staircase. It was dangerous walking up the stairs, I remember. But once you got up the stairs, it was like, I don't know if you could picture, like an old fort where they have, it's like a circle and then there's little slits where you could look through. In this time, when Imam Khomeini was there, when he was in his youth, 14 years old, 15 years old, people would attack his village. So he would climb up to that tower with a rifle and protect his village. If people would try to attack, he would shoot. He would defend his village and the people in his village at 14 years old, 15 years old. That's something that many people don't hear about Imam Khomeini. Something that shows how brave he was. There's a couple other stories that I was reading about before I came to show his bravery. One of them was when he was in prison. Before he was exiled, he was put in prison by the Shah's government. And while he was in prison, in his cell, one of the heads of the Shah's intelligence ministry, his name is Pak Revan, he came to meet Imam Khomeini. And he had a check with him from the Shah for 5 million tomans. Now, of course, the Iranians know in those days, 5 million tomans was a whole lot of money. Probably at least 5 million pounds, maybe even more than that. A check for Imam Khomeini. Imam Khomeini said, "What's this check? What's this money for?" And he said, "The Shah wants to give you this check. He wants to give you this money for you to go back to Qom, teach fiqh, and pray in the mosque and leave dirty politics to us. Walk away from politics and you get all this money." Imam Khomeini said, "Tell the Shah that I'll give him a check for 20 million tomans if he leaves the affairs of the country." And Pak Revan got upset. He says, "Where would you get 20 million tomans from? How do you have that much money?" He says, "It's easy. I'd go and I'd get one toman from every one of the 20 million Iranians in Iran right now, 20 million, and I'd give it to the Shah and he could leave." This showed that Imam Khomeini had public support. Then he also said something that infuriated Pak Revan, that made him very angry. He said, "But you could keep your dirty politics. All I want is independence for this country. I'm not into dirty politics. All I want is independence." And that got Pak Revan very mad, because he stood up and he said, you guys are dirty, but we just want independence. We want the Shah to leave. We don't want America to control us, or England, or whatever other country." Another time was when he was in Iraq. When he was in Iraq, another minister of intelligence came to him, this time as an Iraqi, by the name of Saadan Shaker. And he came to Imam Khomeini. He said, "Look, there's an agreement that was made between Iran and Iraq, which states that you cannot talk about politics. You cannot be politically active when you're in Iraq." You know, when Imam Khomeini was in Iraq, he would send messages, and he was politically active, even though he was an exile. So this person is saying, "You cannot be politically active anymore." Then Imam Khomeini says, "Fine, I'll leave Iraq. No problem, I'll go somewhere else and I'll be politically active somewhere else." So this guy, this Shaker, he started laughing at Imam Khomeini. He said, you don't have any money, where are you going to go? How are you going to leave Iraq? Where are you going to go? What are you going to do?" Imam Khomeini said, "Don't worry. I'll find somewhere that's not under the control of the Shah's government, that's not occupied by the Shah. And this again has made this Iraqi man very upset, because he's saying that the Shah is controlling your government and trying to force me to do things or not do things. So these show how brave he was. Please send a salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Imam Khomeini was also very wise, and his wisdom was something which helped shape the political decisions that he made. Haji Hamouzi, again in his speech, he mentioned that the MKO organization, the Manaf Akins, that the brother said were the hypocrites. This is a terrorist organization. I mean, America, I don't know about England, but I know America considers them a terrorist organization, Iran considers them a terrorist organization. Of course, America helps them, but that's beside the point. Now, this organization, they're responsible for the murder of hundreds, if not thousands, of innocent Iranians inside Iran after the revolution, including some of the very important Islamic figures of Iran. They would kill a number of the people who would lead the Friday prayer leaders. They killed a number of politicians. They committed all kinds of terrible crimes inside Iran. This group, before the revolution, was against the Shah. They were fighting against the Shah, as Imam Khomeini and the righteous revolution was. Of course, their ideology was completely different than Imam Khomeini's, but they were both fighting against a common enemy. And they did not have much power, as Hajra said. Their power was limited. And they thought that if Imam Khomeini would support them, would say something favorable about their organization, that they would be able to have the backing of religious authorities and they'd gain a lot of power in Iran for their movement. So what they did is they sent one of their theorists, one of their intellectuals to Iraq to speak with Imam Khomeini. His name was Hussein Rouhani. And he had a book that he wrote. He took this book and he spoke every day for 1 month with Imam Khomeini, over an hour a day, explaining his ideology, explaining his, you know, why he thinks the things he does. And the people, not everyone, but a number of people in Imam Khomeini's office, including the one who related this story, thought that Imam Khomeini should agree with them, should support them. But at the end of this month, they asked Imam Khomeini, and Imam Khomeini said, they talk about Islam, but they're not Islamic. They have nothing to do with Islam. Now, there's details about exactly what they talked about. But basically, Imam Khomeini was wise. He was able to see that these people, even though they're using the name of Islam, have nothing to do with Islam. So he turned away from them. The person who narrated the story, which was one of the
Gama, who worked in his office, said, years later, when I saw what this organization did, I realized how gullible I was and how wise Imam Khomeini was. Where he was able to recognize this in exile, even though this group was fighting a common enemy, he was able to recognize it and separate himself from them. Which was something amazing. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Another thing that Imam Khomeini did was he revived the theory of Walayatul Faqih and he established an Islamic government in Iran, which is something that's very amazing. As the film that we were watching, it said that for over 1,200 years, maybe even more, the Shias did not have such a government. The Shias dreamed of such a government, that one day we'll be able to have a country run by Islam with ulama at the head. And Imam Khomeini was the one who was able to put this into practice through his sincerity, through this multi-dimensional character that he had, through all of the positive traits that he had. Allah established the Islamic government through Imam Khomeini. Now, what was asked of me was to speak a little bit about the characteristics of the Wali of Faqih. And what I decided to do was to look and see what Imam Khomeini himself described the Wali of Faqih to be, and to explain it in that way. Now, there's many characteristics that the Wali of Faqih should have. Okay, many characteristics. Two of them, I'm going to mention only two of them, but the characteristics are not limited to the two that I mentioned. Now, the two characteristics I'm going to mention, one of them is knowledge of the law, and the second one is justice. Okay? Knowledge of the law, what is meant by knowledge of the law? Knowledge of the law means that he has to be a mujtahid. He has to know what Islamic law is. The purpose of the Islamic government is to implement Islamic laws. And if you don't know what those laws are, you won't know how to implement or what to implement. So you have to be a mujtahid. Now, some people might say, why would you have to be a mujtahid? If you're not a mujtahid, you follow a mujtahid in taqlid. You could read and you could figure out what the laws are. You know what they are, but you do taqlid, and the mujtahid is the one who tells you what's right and what's wrong, what's halal and what's haram. It's simple if one thinks about it, because in that case, the mujtahid would be over the ruler. As there's a hadith that says, Al-fuqaha huqamun ala salatin. The fuqaha, the jurists, are rulers over the kings. So, if the mujtahid is higher than the leader, the mujtahid is giving him orders, this leader doesn't have much power. It's the mujtahid who has all the power. So in an Islamic country, the mujtahid should have the power. But does the mujtahid have to be the most knowledgeable mujtahid alive? In this, Imam Khomeini is of the opinion that no, he doesn't. This is not it's not necessary that the Wali Faqih has to be the most knowledgeable, although it's possible that he is in whatever time. Now, justice is also very important. And justice is, there's two different types of justice that we could look at. One is justice on a social level, and one is justice on an individual level. On a social level, it's clear what we mean by justice. Is one has to rule justly between people. One cannot favor a certain race. One cannot favor a certain nationality. One cannot favor even a certain religion. One has to judge justly in accordance to whatever facts he has. That's what justice is on a social level. On an individual level, what we mean by justice is something different. It means that you have to be just to yourself. What does that mean? That you cannot oppress yourself. Committing sins is oppression to yourself. If you commit a sin, you've oppressed yourself. So if you commit a sin, you're not just. You're unjust. So the leader, the Wali of Faqih, has to be someone who does not commit sins. That seems very difficult. Is that possible? Is it possible that there's a human who's not masoom, who doesn't commit sins? Yes. Imam Khomeini was such. Sayyid Khamenei is such as well right now. There's a whole body in the Iranian constitution that watches over every single action that the supreme leader does. Everything. And if he commits one sin, he loses all his power. He's taken out of the position of Wali Faqih and someone else will be put in. One sin. If he looks at a non-mahram, if he does whatever, one sin that he does, he's gone. So these are two important qualities of a Wali Faqih, and it also shows that it's not something easy to become a Wali Faqih. To become a mujtahid needs years and years and years of studying. To become just, where you don't commit a sin, needs years and years and years of spiritual building. To be able to reach such a level where you could become the Islamic leader. The leader of the Islamic nation, which of course, if you're seeking to become this, you won't reach it anyways. There's another aspect of Wali Faqih that I wanted to mention, and this is the authority that the Wali Faqih has in accordance to Imam Khomeini. This is an issue that's debated. This is probably the most debated issue about Wali Faqih, is what authority does the Wali Faqih have? Now, I'm not going to go through all the debates. I'm not going to go through all of the reasoning of the debates. I just want to mention what Imam Khomeini's opinion on this matter was. Imam Khomeini stated that the same authority that the Prophet had, the wali fiqih has in taking care of the affairs of the government, of the country. The exact same authority. And as such, just as it's obligatory to obey the Prophet in these matters, it's the same, it's obligatory to follow the wali fiqih in those matters. And matters that have to do with the issues of the government or the issues of the country, of the Islamic world. There's a statement that I read of his, where he said, if people think that the authority that the Prophet had was more than the authority that Imam Ali had in these matters, they're wrong, they're mistaken. And if one thinks that the authority that Imam Ali had was more than the authority that the Wali Faqih has in these matters, they're mistaken. They're wrong. So Imam Khomeini is of this view. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. It seems that we're running out of time, so I'm not going to bore you for too much longer, inshallah. The last aspect of Walayatul Faqih, of being a leader, an Islamic leader, that I wanted to mention was the lifestyle that this person should have. Now, the Wali Faqih lives his life just as any normal citizen would live his life. It's not as the sister mentioned, it's not as the kings or the presidents or the leaders of state that you see in the world today, where they live in huge mansions, they have enormous amounts of money. That's not what an Islamic leader is. An Islamic leader lives his life as a normal citizen, as a normal person. An example of this with Imam Khomeini, which people mention, was the small house that he had, which you saw on the video. And whoever has gone to Jamaran and visited it, you could testify to how simple his house was. And he didn't even own that house, he rented that house. Second was one that one of my friends was mentioning the other day, which was very interesting to me. He said that during the Iran-Iraq war, Imam Khomeini was in Jamaran, and the Iranian authorities gained intelligence that Iraq is going to bomb Jamaran. They're going to bomb close to Imam Khomeini's house, probably with the goal of killing Imam Khomeini. So what did they want to do? The army came to the house of Imam Khomeini and said, come, let's take you to a bunker somewhere so you won't get hurt. Imam Khomeini said, no, I'm not going to go anywhere. Until you bring all of the people of this area into that bunker, I'm not going to go. Because I'm not special, I'm not better than these people. I'm just as they are. The way that he lives his life is just as the normal citizen would. Both in monetary issues, in money, and also in matters such as these. Now we saw the video, and we saw that after Imam Khomeini passed away, that a number of people, including the video, was suggesting even Imam Khomeini, thought that Sayyid Khamenei was the best person to follow him. And of course, my opinion doesn't really matter, but of course I agree with them. I just want to compare the lifestyle, this one aspect of Sayyid Khamenei to Imam Khomeini, and then I'll end this speech there. Sayyid Khamenei also, he has a very simple house in a very normal area of Tehran, which it could be either central Tehran or maybe even a little south. The people, Iranians, would know better than me. One other thing which happened very recently, which shows how much importance Sayyid Khamenei gives to living as a normal person, was his wife got very sick very recently. It was either her liver or her liver. She got very sick and she needed surgery. In Iran, if any of you who have been to Iran, have been to hospitals in Iran, you know that there's two different types of hospitals. One hospital is very good and very expensive, and one hospital is very bad and very cheap. And for me, whenever I get sick, I never go to the hospital. I'm scared of the hospitals in Iran. Now, Sayyid Khamenei, being the Wali Faqih, being the head of state, could easily have sent his wife to the best hospital, and she would have the best service, and inshallah, there'd be no problems, and you know, she would have a successful surgery and heal. But Sayyid Khamenei didn't do that. He said that, no, I can't give you permission to go to that hospital. You have to go to a governmental hospital, one of the poorest types of hospitals. And not only do you have to go there, you cannot tell anybody that you're my wife. Because if you tell people you're my wife, they'll take extra care of you, and they'll, you know, they might bring the doctors from those really good hospitals down there, whatever the case may be. So she had to go incognito to a very low hospital to get the surgery. And she did. She went to the hospital, she got the surgery, alhamdulillah, it was a successful surgery. And then the following day, Sayyid Khamenei came and visited her. And everyone in the hospital was shocked. They did not believe that they just did surgery to the rahbar, the leader of the Islamic government's wife, in such a hospital. And this shows you that a true Islamic leader lives his lifestyle according to the people, does not take advantage of the position that he has. Because he's in a position he could easily take advantage, but he doesn't. Because of the justice he has, because of the knowledge of the law he has, and because of the other qualities he has. I'm going to end this speech by mentioning one quote from Sayyid Ali Khamenei, and then, inshallah, I'll leave you alone. The speech is, the quote is this. He says, Imam Khomeini's path is my path. Imam Khomeini's goals are my goals. Imam Khomeini's advice is the light which guides me. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.